Yes, hello there and welcome to Join Up Darts. This is an archive show, which means that I'm not here at the moment, but it's all pre-recorded. But it does give you just a glimpse of what's been happening on the iTunes number one business entrepreneur show since we launched. Now, this show is different and you'll hear laughter, tears, shocking stories, real life turmoil, and of course, the kind of success blueprint that will change your life forever. If you want the dream life, then all the answers are here. Now, these are the old episodes, so to get right up to date listening to the latest stuff, then simply search Join Up Darts, click subscribe, and never miss an episode again. And of course, over at joinupdarts.com, you can get instant access to our free 12-day podcasting course or loads of amazing free downloads to kickstart your own entrepreneurial journey, all made by my own fair hand. So let's get on with the show. You got a lot of catching up to do after all. Enjoy.
When we're young, we have an amazing, positive outlook about how great life is going to be. But somewhere along the line, we forget to dream and end up settling. Join Up Dots features amazing people who refuse to give up and chose to go after their dreams. This is your blueprint for greatness. So here's your host, live from the back of his garden in the UK, David Ralph.
Hello everybody in internet land, how are you all? I hope you're well. This is episode 53 and I'll be honest with you, I don't like to moan, but I don't feel very well today. So I've got an earache, I've got a sore throat and my nose is running, but it won't bring me down, I promise you, because A, I'm a professional, and B, I don't want to let you down. And so my best is going to get even better today. And there's a reason why I said this phrase, because today's guest is a man who is on this planet to make our best even better. He is a man who's driven himself to the top of his game as a coach, productivity expert, and author, and is quite simply the guy to turn to if you want to make your best even better. He's earned two master's degrees after studying US history and Spanish literature, and then went on to earn another in education to understand how to teach. Add another master's in psychology, and then you really have an intoxicating and powerful mix that can look into the core of all of us and help us raise our game. As an executive coach, he provides practical methods to achieve quality work-life balance. He's worked with leaders and executives for over 14 years in the business and education sectors, and with his focus on creating ideas that matter and implementing solutions that are valuable to the organization, he's been very busy indeed. While traveling worldwide, he also trains and competes regularly as an age group triathlete too. Now, if all that education seeking and performance enhancing would make you, like me, want to throw yourself down on the nearest sofa with a huge tub of Ben and Jerry's and take it easy, well, he's not like that at all. Our guest seems to have a limitless amount of energy. Since 2003, he's completed 4 half Ironman distance races, several half marathons, and several smaller triathlons around the United States. He consistently places in the top 10% of his age group in both 5K and 10K races. So without further ado, whilst we have him sitting, I guess, in one spot, let's start joining up dots with the one and only Jason Womack. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic, and I just want to say thank you, first of all, for reading that long introduction, and second of all, for giving me something to aspire to.
Did it feel like a long introduction? Because I must admit, when I sort of get those introductions together, I sort of pull them together from a myriad of sources, and most of the time, I look at them, and I think, David, what are you doing with your life? All these people are doing these amazing amount of things, cramming it into a day, and I don't really know what I do with myself. So did it seem like a long introduction? When you listen to that, do you think, God, do I actually do all this kind of stuff?
I like looking at it through your eyes. And I use the word your very relatively, because everyone that I do get to work with, you know, look, by the time that you're going to sit down and work with someone as a mentor or a master teacher or a trainer, and you know this from the old days, We want to know who we're sitting across from. We want to know who we're breaking bread with. And so, you know, when I originally got the email from you, I'll be very transparent. I immediately went to the internet. I typed in your name and the name of your organization. And there we start to get a kaleidoscope. And I think if it's one thing that I'm really a proponent of is, and this is what we're going to get to talk to today, is we are in the position and the business of building a portfolio, no longer building a resume. And the reason I say that is because, well, I'm very excited about getting a chat with you, but the whole concept for me of joining up dots, or remember when Steve Jobs says connecting the dots, it really truly was about looking around and saying, hey, what are the tools, who are the people, and what are the experiences I have access to?
Did you remember, I normally play the speech sort of later on, but I'm going to do it straight away because you built it up so well there. But do you remember the time that you actually heard these words? Because so many of the guests that I speak to, I would say like 99% say to me, I actually use these words myself, or I have these on my fridge, or I have these on my notice board. Did you remember when you actually heard them the first time?
Not only that, David, I actually play a portion of that speech in every seminar I present worldwide.
So what is the strength? Well, actually, I'm going to ask you that afterwards. I'm going to play the speech now, and then I'm going to ask you that question that I was just leading up to. What is the strength of these words in their form for you? So this is Steve Jobs.
Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college, but it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart, even when it leads you off the well-worn path. And that will make all the difference.
So does it make all the difference, Jason?
I want to key off of something, a word that I heard you use, I believe I counted three, maybe four times, the word trust. And I look at that word trust as both a noun and a verb. I look at it as a thing, you know, do I have trust in this relationship? Do I have trust in the path that I'm on? But I also look at it as an active process. I trust, we trust, I am trusting. And I think what I get when I consider those words from Mr. Jobs is show up. Continue to show up. And there's going to be days when I give everything that I've got. I give what I would call my best. And there's some days when it resonates with the planet. It works with the people that I'm working with. And there's other days when, and I'm not going to say my best wasn't good enough, but maybe what it was is that the dots were not ready to be aligned just yet.
I agree with that. I agree totally, because what I get from that is kind of the same thing as trust, but just do stuff, just take action and just get off your backside. Say to yourself, okay, if I've got 3 hours to myself today, instead of watching 3 episodes of Grey's Anatomy, do something that might benefit your life, because you had those 3 hours and 3 hours and 3 hours, and you're going to start making an inroad. And when you start making an inroad to something, quite often it creates a passion in you as well. And then suddenly that 3 hours, you manage to make it 4 hours, 5 hours, and then you've got a chance of a different type of future.
Well, I'm really seeing the advantage that modern society and the cultures that I get to spend my most time with. And just for point of reference, over the past 6 weeks, I've gotten to do work in the country of Canada, throughout the United States, Indonesia, Hong Kong. Next week, I'll be visiting New York City and Providence, Rhode Island. And the advantage that I'm seeing that we have right now is this incredible access to, and I'm going to go there, science, specifically brain science. And so a part of today's conversation with you, I would love for us to spin around this concept of what we know right now, what we're beginning to tap into when it comes to neuropsychobiofeedback. Okay, that was a lot to take in at one time. But what we know about the way the brain works, here's the fundamental, is the brain wants to close the gap. The brain wants to fill time. The brain wants to solve problems, especially the male brain. And I'm speaking from experience. But when I'm in a situation, and again, these are topics that we're going to get to today, but I'm just trying to let people know where we're going. What got me into the advising and coaching business was I tend to attract people who have a vision of how life could be, but aren't right now in a position to make life that way. Meaning, they see something wrong, they found a problem, they have something they could complain about. And the way the brain works and what I study for people is, how do we close that gap with minimal effort and maximum output?
And is it as easy, well, that's the wrong word, but is it just the matter of closing a gap? Do we all have that gap? And is it something that fundamentally will hold us back unless we bridge it?
Not only that, but it's culture, it's experience, it's education, it's intuition. I'll give you a classic example. When a United States citizen, an American, travels to your country of England, we want to look one way before we cross the street, right? If I approach the end of a sidewalk and I'm about to cross through to the other side, every part of my being wants to look that way. But when I'm with you and I'm in your country, I have to be able to look the other way. And so how do we train ourselves to take what works? Yes, it's absolutely appropriate for me to approach the end of that street and just to automatically look that way, maybe even out of my peripheral. But you and I both know, walking around the city streets of central London, we better take another look the other way twice.
And most of the time I was drunk walking around the streets of London, I'll be honest.
You got to be careful. So from the time, and you know, you've got some kids and you've been through that row a couple of times, several times now. When you think about what they do to figure out the world they live in, one, they are insatiably curious. What does this do? What does this taste like? What will this look like if I take it apart? The other one is they are darn persistent. You know, we've got some family friends and their infant, I shouldn't say infant, their toddler now, this week took her first steps. And they have it on their cell phone camera. Here are their first steps. What was fascinating is this has been a process that's been going on for a few weeks now. But here's the deal. You know, after the 33rd time that the kid fell down, the parents did not look at the kid and go, look, you've tried this 33 times. It's not working. Just give up.
Right. So if somebody is out there and is, you know, it's as much to do with culture, how do they change? How do they learn to look the other way if they need to, if all they are at the moment is purely existing? They're not living, they're existing. They're in that contentment zone where they're in a job and it's paying the bills. But deep down, there's something in them gnawing away that they want to change. How do they start looking in a different direction?
Well, there's two options we have. Do you want the fast and easy way, or do you want the hard takes a long time way?
I think the hard take a long time is the one that actually achieves, don't you?
Well, for figuring this out, the hard and take a long time way, I would say figure out and do it. The easy, fast way is to attach yourself to the shirt tails of 2, 3, 4, 5 people who are looking, acting, living, experiencing, and having something akin to what you're interested in. So, for example, when I got to London the first time, before I got there, I went to my social online profile, namely LinkedIn, because that's my more professional one. And I started reaching out to people who had worked in, lived in, or were currently stationed in the city of London. And what I did is I was going over there to deliver a couple of workshops on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I arrived on a Sunday. And I gave myself 2 days, full days, Monday and Tuesday. Now, I did this, David. I don't know. This might have been a decade ago, the first time I did this. And I set up a breakfast, a lunch, happy hour, and dinner. 4 meetings over 2 days. And over those 8 days, I think I learned more about how the city of London works than if I had read the Voter's Guide, if I had downloaded the Lonely Planet Guide, if I had tried to research it through some internet search engine. So for me, I'm always looking, and I wrote a whole chapter about this in the book. I'm always looking to develop what I call my social network. Not my social media network. That's another discussion that we could have later on. My social network are the 5 people that when I have a problem in some certain situation, the 5 people that I could call and they would answer the phone on the second or third ring.
Because Jim Rohn, he's got the classic quote, hasn't he, that you are the average of the five people you surround yourself with. And you have to be so careful. If you surround yourself with negative people, then ultimately that's going to rub off of you. If you surround yourself with successful people, then once again. So was that a focus of his speech, his comment, or was that something that you naturally knew was right inherently?
Somehow or other, this is back when I was still teaching in secondary education here in California. This is back in the 90s. Somehow or other, I came across that. I didn't meet or hear of Jim Rohn till much later. Now, who knows? There was something in the water. There was something in the ether. But somehow, and by the way, what I want to do for folks listening right now, and by the way, thanks for bearing with us. We got some good things we're going to talk about. What I would like to do is take this out of the theoretical. You know, because look, everyone can, yes, agree. They'll shake their head up and down. Yes, Jason, if I hang around negative people, I'll be negative. If I hang around positive people, I'll be positive. Let's go practical. Here's what I need you to do. Here's what I did. I took out a piece of paper and I drew a matrix of sorts. And down the left-hand column, I wrote the initials of the five people who I had spent the most time with over the past 168 hours, the past week. So that whoever those five people were who I've spent the most time with in the past 7 days. And then what I did, David, is I made these columns. And the columns I make, and I still do this to this day, the columns I make are things like, how many days of workshops do they attend as a learner every year? How many weeks of vacation do they take with their family away from work every year? How many books do they read every year?
But how are you going to know that, Jason? Sorry to jump in.
You know, I ask them. I literally ask them. I go, hey, about how many books did you read over the past couple months? And they'll say, oh, I think it's two or three, which really means one or two. And I go, great. So they're reading two books every 2 months. That's 12 a year. I'll talk to someone else. Hey, about how many conferences did you go to last year? Oh, I went to that one, six, four, seven. I think it was about 10 days worth, they'll tell me. Great. So I'll put down seven. You know, people are always exaggerating a little bit. And it's not that I'm going for the exact, but I need something to hold my hat on. And then here's what I found, David, is that if my associates, if the five people cumulatively, the five people that I spent the most time with, averaged reading 10 books per year, guess how many books I read per year? If the average of the five people that I spent time with were spending 7 days a year in conferences and workshops, darn it, I was right there with them. I was average. So I started doing things like I found a guy. I remember when I added my first millionaire to my group of five. And the next year, my income went up by 8%. Now, was it going to do that anyway? Was I on the track to have those dots connect? I don't know. But here's what I can tell you practically. I started adding people who read more books, attended more conferences, took more vacation, and made more money. And I started doing the same.
Because, well, you know, I think it comes back to Steve Jobs' speech about belief. If you do surround yourself with people and they are, in your eyes, more successful or more productive or more of this or more of that, you actually have visible proof and you believe that actually, yes, I am letting myself down, or I can raise my game, or I can push myself. I remember reading this thing about geniuses, and there's two types of geniuses. There's ones who can create stuff that no one's ever seen before, and there's ones who can improve upon things that have been already out there. So they can see like a car and go, okay, if we could improve the car, how can we do that? And with you surrounding yourself with all those people, I kind of think you fall into the second category where you kind of think, yeah, it is possible because I've seen them. So you ultimately are going to improve.
The other thing that you just made me think of is, what are the topics of discussions when I sit down with people? Because in my experience, most people will fall into one of two camps. Yes, there's going to be crossover and a little bit of mixture, but most of the time people will talk about A, what happened, or B, what could happen. They're talking about the past or they're talking about the future. My job, if I'm going to get to where I want to be, if I'm going to make my best any better, is to find people who A, are willing to talk about a future, B, that's better than the current or the past.
Is that so important? Because I Have you done the test Strength Finders 2.0 by Tom Rafe?
I went through that book in the assessment. Thought it was amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing. I've spoke about this several times, but if you're coming across this episode, first of all, there's a book called Strength Finders 2.0, and it's a very small book. And the key point to it is you get a code for a website, and you can go on the website and you can answer. I think it's about 176 questions, and they're very much in the grey areas, and you've got about 20 seconds on each to answer, and you will answer one question and give it your best shot, and then about 10 down you suddenly think, oh blimey, this is almost the same as that one before. How did I answer that one? And at the end of it, it comes out with your five strengths. And the points of it all is that instead of focusing on your weaknesses, focusing on the things that you can do really well, A, you're going to enjoy yourself, B, you're going to improve quicker, and C, it's you know, there's no point in focusing on weaknesses. It's a trait that we're forced through school and through our parents to always go, okay, you're doing really well on this, but let's get you tuition on this other bit. Now, my number one thing was futuristic. And when it came out, it was the first time ever that I felt justified for being futuristic, because I've always been that. And people have always said, oh, yeah, you're a dreamer, or, oh, yes, you're this, you're that. And it was the first time ever that I looked at it and thought, that's a good thing to have. Being futuristic, that's not going to hold me back. That's actually going to push me forward.
I love all the assessments that are available out there, and you know, over the past 20 years, and I got to spend a little bit of time studying psychology, kind of capital P psychology, and essentially what I find is that anybody who's willing to dive into and spend some time looking at whether it's Strengths Finder, and we could probably go through the whole list of all the assessments out there, I think the macro view of this is as or more important than the micro. I did Strengths Finder, I did Myers-Briggs, I did the Winslow assessment, I did the ASVAB. The macro view of this is you're willing to look in the mirror and say, who are you? And I think a lot of people will end the day and they'll look back and they'll say, what did you do? But not a lot of people are willing to end the day looking in the mirror and saying, who are you? How are you? Where are you going?
Who are you then, Jason?
Oh boy, that's the Pandora's box. Ever since I was a kid, I know I've been told that I'm curious. Want to know why. As a child, I used to, you know, I used to drive up the adults crazy because I would why. A couple of things that are probably important to the folks listening to this as far as background. I'm a unique, well, we're all unique, but I didn't have television when I was growing up. From the time I was 5 until I was about 14, we didn't have a television in our house. Now, I had access to it because I would go visit with friends or the school. I remember we got one of the first televisions in our school. But I really think that kind of 9-year period, what it gave to me was the ability to go find what I was interested in. Now, at the time, all I had was books. But I can tell you, David, I remember when I was a kid early on, and we were just learning programming. I mean, you know, it was 10-20-30-. And we were going through this, and I can remember thinking, why couldn't I just push something on the paper book that I was reading and have a video appear? Why couldn't I just press a word in the book I was reading and have the dictionary show up? Now, I'm not going to, you know, call Jeff Bezos and say, hey, Amazon, you know, the Kindle was my idea. but I think I was in that track to realize that we are one question away from a better future.
And do you have children yourself?
We don't. No, Jody and I, we've been hanging out together for about 21 years now, married for 15, and two things came together. I was a high school teacher. I did that for about 6 years, and Jody actually worked in the grammar schools as the librarian. And then what we found is that the contribution we love making is we help people magnify the vision of why they're on the planet. For small business owners, that's helping them build their business. We've worked with family businesses. We've worked with large organizations. And that whole growing someone's vision has really, really been interesting to us.
So hugely hypothetical, but if you did have a little Jason, do you think that you would limit the amount of television that he watched?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. You know, I've never thought of that before. Because we do. We have these nephews and nieces, and I've got younger cousins, and I've got all my friends who have kids. And, you know, screen time, I really think that we're going to have a lot of research to look back on. I mean, here, why don't we reference Steve Jobs here for a moment? I mean, Steve Jobs and screen time. I think in 10, 20 years, we're going to have some pretty interesting feedback about the kind and time of screen time that people have right now. You know, hypothetically, would I, wouldn't I? I'm not sure I'm in a position to answer that. The good that I see people doing in that interactive, you know, what I would say is this. What I'm really interested in watching is how will this young generation, and I'm talking about the 4, 5, 6, 7-year-olds, when we add 2 decades to their desires, I'm very interested in what they will have created to interact much more seamlessly with the screens than we have currently.
And, how could they do that, though? Because how can you separate the constant technology, which is, you know, my son sits on the sofa and he's half watching the telly and he's half doing something on his tablet. And you kind of say to him, why don't you just turn the telly off? Oh, I'm watching that. Well, you can't be watching that because you're doing this. So how can you sort of reduce the amount of technology, but to make it more productive for people?
I think it has to be a lot more intuitive, and it has to be a lot more it's basic psychology. We will lean in, let's use Sheryl Sandberg for a little while. We will lean into where we're getting the most engagement with the chemical side of our body, the kinds of chemicals that fire when we are acknowledged. I mean, I don't know if you remember, if you're old enough, but you know, when I was a kid, we had romper room, and I can remember, like, we'd be over at some friend's house, and it was the weekend, and there she was, I forget the woman's name, but she would look into the camera. This was way back when, and she would say, "I see Susan, and I see George." And I see, and we were just waiting. We were waiting to hear our names. The moment that we can make that technology, that experience, that screen time, the moment that we can tap straight into the viewer's mind, how do we serve up something that is more interesting to fewer people? So if you think about that idea of what television or screen time was as old from a psychological and engagement viewpoint, we looked at how loud could we make things and how much repetition could we give. And if we're going to talk about this topic of our own engagement with the world, what every single one of us is looking for, back to something we talked about earlier, David, is closing the gap. So what's the ultimate gap? I think the ultimate gap, or the dots to connect, are who am I, why am I here, and what can I do to be a better me tomorrow than I am today? And so whatever people can do to put themselves in a position to get feedback on that, it's one of the most significant things I see to human potential development. Not the work that they have to do. I mean, there are a lot of people who are willing to do the work. My question to them is, when, how often, and who are you getting feedback from that the hard work you're doing is worth it, that it would make you want to continue going on?
And that's the key thing, isn't it, is the feedback. And I think so much in life nowadays just whizzes on. You know, I'm doing a daily show at the moment, and I really passionately want to become better and better and better as a host. But in many ways, it's so much one guest comes on, I do the show, I edit it, bang, it's out. The next one comes on, boom, boom. I haven't really got enough time at the moment to reflect on the improvement. And because it's so fast and so interactive with the other guests, I haven't got the chance to, you know, assess the feedback, really. It's just push it out, push it out, push it out. So in a normal life with people getting up, whizzing to work, coming back, how do they get feedback about their actual performance, except for in a corporate world, your monthly targets, your quarterly targets?
There's two things on my mind in response to that prompt. Number one is, and for anybody listening right now, please, please, I'm going to give a little plug here. Jump over, and if you're getting value from Join Up Dots podcast, leave it some stars and leave it a rating. Because David, you and I both know, you know, we're going to date stamp this when we're talking about it versus when it's published. But I went and looked, you have 13 amazing reviews over in the iTunes review store.
You have looked around, now, haven't you?
I try to do my homework. Now, you and I both know when you get a new review, that gives you a good 48 to 72 hours of juice, of energy, of momentum. So for anyone who's wondering what difference they could make to their world, here would be my first number one activity. Go thank someone. And don't just send them an email with thank you in the subject line. Actually sit down and visualize, why are you thankful? What did they do that made your world a better place? How is who and how they are contributing to who and how you are? David, I write a handwritten thank you card every day. Every day of my life, at least one handwritten thank you card with a stamp, hand addressed, goes into the mailbox. Sometimes it's more. And what I found is, yes, in a way that thank you card is for the person who's receiving it, but the real aspect of it, I get to spend about 5 to 7 minutes in gratitude. I get to pause. You know, people ask me, you know, Jason, do you meditate? Is meditation part of your performance technique? And I used to answer, well, no, not really. But you know what? I think, and this has been going on for a few years now, I think my thank you card process is my daily meditation. I'm focused, I'm mindful, I'm present, I'm aware, and I'm connected to my world. So that would be my first little response to that, the prompt that you put out there. When we're talking about, you know, that engagement process of moving forward, of getting from where we are right now to where we're going, I have to come back to, you know, what is that environment that you're surrounded by? What is the group of people you're surrounded by? I've got one end of the day technique that I teach my clients. Can I talk a little bit about that?
You tell us.
So at the end of the day, and here would be the first 5-day experiment that I would ask everyone to engage in. Here in the States, you can buy these little, they call them 3x5 note cards. Just imagine a stack of note cards. You can buy these at any supply or stationery store. And if you put 5 of these cards, they're about the size of your hand, the palm of your hand. If you put 5 of these cards next to your nightstand with a pen, just for the next 5 nights, I want you to write down 3 things at the end of the day. Now, you might use different words, but here are mine. So at the end of the day, every day, I write down, I call it ACG. A stands for accomplish. What did I notice the world around me accomplish? It could be at work. It could be in life. It could be something I read in the news. It could be something I heard on the radio. But what got moved forward today? The second thing that I write down, C, stands for complete. What did I personally complete? What did I tick off the checklist? What to do I no longer have to worry about doing because it's already done? And then the third one, and I've alluded to this, but let me put a magnifying glass on it. The third one is G, it's gratitude. What is it very specifically that I'm grateful for having seen, been a part of, or heard that day? So A, accomplish. C, complete. G, gratitude. At the end of the day, I look back on these 3 things, and what happens is I come fully present, but also I give myself the feedback on my own experience. Where you're right, sometimes life goes by so darn fast, we don't get a chance to celebrate the win, because as soon as we win, we're on to the next competition.
As you were talking there, I was thinking to myself, when was the last time I've actually written anything? Because most of the time you just sort of bash out of an email and you sort of type and type and type. And it made me remember, maybe about a year and a half ago, I decided that I was going to write a letter to my family. I was going through a few sort of health issues, and without being dramatic, it was worrying at the time. It turned out to be stress, but at the time I thought I was a goner. Now I can look back and sort of laugh at it a bit. For being stupid. But I wrote these letters, and I wrote these letters to my wife and my kids and my mum and dad and, you know, friends and that, to sort of say, you know, thank you so much. I remember this and I remember that. And if it wasn't for you doing this, and I really sort of wrote from the heart. Like, if I did die 2 days later, they would have my last memories of them. And literally all of them just thought I was having a mad moment or sort of a breakdown or whatever. And it really struck me strangely that it wasn't me having the problem of being grateful. It was them accepting it. Do you find that at all when you send the cards out?
100%.
It's strange, isn't it?
100%. And you know, I will be very transparent. Many of those thank you cards I write, I do not sign my last name, nor do I put a return address. So literally, a thank you card might land at the hotel manager of the hotel I just stayed at, or the restaurant maitre d' where I had a wonderful dinner at. Because I'm not doing this, and I've had to really question this over the years. I've been doing this for about 12 years now. And what I've found is that the less attached I am to hoping that they get it, the better.
Yeah.
The more engaged I am in the process of being grateful, that really is what I'm in it for. Now, you've struck on something very, very important to me, which is I call it practice on the small things so I can perform on the big ones. This is one of my tenets of productivity, in fact. When I start practicing something new, if you've not written a letter to someone and the first letter that they get from you is this heart-opening, engaging, loving, very present, I could go on, but you get where I'm going. Mm. If that's the first one they get from you, they might feel a little off. So for me, you know, people will, it's that New Year's resolution experience where people go from 0 to 100 very fast. I had a mentor of mine, David, years ago. She says, Jason, when you walk into the room, you tend to be about a 100 watt light bulb. She said, what I want you to do is start practicing walking in, not with a switch on the wall, but the dimmer dial. She said, come in at 10. And then go to 20, and then go to 40. And then by the time the day is over, you'll be at 120 and people will be with you.
Why did, I'm losing my voice here. Why did she say that then? Because I was a trainer for years and I always used to come in, bang, it was the big performance, you know, it was the memorable bit. I took control of the room. I had the audience. Why did she want you to just sort of crank it up?
Two things. One is that will work for people that it works for audiences that expect it. The moment that you start changing audiences, I might be in a boardroom with the C-level of an organization. The next day I could be in an incubator working with startups. The third day I could be speaking at a church, and the fourth day I could be speaking for a school district. Different audiences will accept and move into different kinds of energetic. So as long as that person, you know, I'm thinking of kind of those super excited, not necessarily motivational speakers, but when everyone is in a room for that kind of a presentation, they know what's being expected. They know what's happening. Mm. If I were to walk into the room with, you know, if I were looking at it in a room and Bill Gates and, you know, if there were different people in the room, I would speak to them differently.
Yeah, I think I was always, generally speaking, to the same kind of audience. And so
exactly,
they got to know me, so I could play that
and
card.
And by the way, why you would continue to do that is because of the feedback you got, right? At the end of the program, you would get the sheets or the emails or the comments in the hallway, and they would literally tell you, David, we love your energy. We love the way that you got us enthused. We love the examples you gave to us. Am I right?
Well, yeah, you are. But I kind of, I'll be honest, I stopped believing them. And I think this is a human trait as well. When I started, I used to clamor for those. I used to hand them out, desperate for them. And in the end, I used to think, oh, but it's going to be good because they know me. They're going to say that anyway, you know. And it was strange. I didn't pay attention to the praise, even though I'm sure it was heartfelt.
And let's go back to something that we've talked about a little while already. It's because there was no longer a gap. Your mind didn't have to connect the where I am to where I want to be because you were already there. And it's no surprise to me that you're moving in this direction with where you're going professionally, career-wise, and contributively. It's a word I made up. But what you're contributing now to the planet, I mean, just look at the format that you've created, right? 53 episodes every day for the past 53 days, and you're highlighting what you do and how you are alongside some amazing people that you've had the chance to talk to.
It does blow me away. I have to be honest, where we're sitting here now, and I'm trying to think what date we're recording this, 6th of May, and it's going out on the 20th of June. So we've got a bit of a sort of backlog building up. But even to the point of my very first interview that I did, which was back on March the 21st, to now, I can't imagine how I've been able to have the conversations with the type of people that I've been having them with New York Times best-selling authors, actresses, businessmen, online marketers, productivity coaches. It's amazing. And my point of, you know, I'm not even surrounding myself with five people. I'm surrounding myself with like 500 people. And I can feel the change in myself. I wake up every morning 3 hours earlier than I want to because I'm just ready to go. It's like there's rocket power flooding through me, which I never used to have before. And that's simply because I am surrounding myself smack in the middle of something that at the moment is becoming bigger than myself. And I'm being sucked in a direction which is hugely exciting, really scary at times, but God, I can't wait to see what's around the corner.
You're creating new gaps, and every cell of your body will look for ways to. And this is, you know, I'll just put up the in the United States, there's this sport of NASCAR, of car racing. And as the cars go around and around, if there's some kind of a collision or if there's some debris in the road, they'll raise different colored flags. And some flags mean go faster, some flags mean come to a complete stop. The flag that I'm seeing us need to be aware of is what I call the caution flag. And the caution flag is the moment we become comfortable is the moment that we stop trying to close the gap. Not good, not bad, not right, not wrong. But I just want everyone to be very aware of where is the gap, how far out is that, and what is your brain doing on a daily, continual basis to bring you the information you need to get to your next there?
Jason, you wrote a book, How to Make Your Best Even Better. Now, apologies if I haven't got that title 100% right. But how do when I was looking at that book, I was thinking, blimey, that really sets him out there, that people are looking at him to make their best even better. How is he going to continue to make his best even better? How do you do that? Obviously, you've touched on the sort of gratitude and the almost meditation and the focus that you have. But how do you make your best even better when, from my side of the fence, you're pretty much near the top anyway?
You know, I'm fascinated by what people will admit when they trust one another. I'm very intrigued by the vocabulary that people use to describe where they are. So I'll do things, for example, just last month I sent an email out, and you know, email communication is always a strange one, because we have these mailing lists and we have these newsletters and things that we can send out. But I did do one because I needed to try something, and here's how it worked. I sent an email out to my community, several thousands of people, and the email is very short, David. The subject line said this. It said, two questions. And the body of the email was very short. It said, hi, David, what are two questions you have for me, Jason? Well, of the many emails I sent, within about 4 or 5 days, I got 130 responses. That was 260 questions. So now what I'm doing is I'll just dedicate, you know, a couple hours a week for the next year or so, and I'm going to answer every question as it's come in. Now, the best getting better aspect of it is, here's what I know. I'm getting the 2014 version of what people need answers to when the book was published in 2012. Now, are there carryovers? Absolutely. You know, the way that I wrote the book, I wanted it to be a book of fundamentals. You know, you don't manufacture antiques. You go discover antiques. You go rediscover something that was already made, and you put it into the current vernacular, the current storytelling. So by me reaching out to the community and saying, hey, what questions do you have about my product? Then I can start to serve up. So anybody who's starting something right now, you know, those of you listening to this who are on the solopreneur, entrepreneur, intrapreneur, if you're doing a side hustle, as Gary Vaynerchuk might call it, simply reach out to the close community that you have and say, hey, folks, what is it that you're dealing with, struggling with, intrigued by, and how can I play a part in helping you get further along the path? And I really think that's the fastest way I know of to start a business.
And so it is as simple as that. The more value you can provide to people, the more value you gain. And so ultimately, your best will get better because of what you give to other people.
For this unique population, and I keep going back to these super niche products that people cannot wait to buy. Call them early adopters. There are people who are so looking forward to the next album that that artist creates. It's the next painting that that creative puts together, the next article that that author writes, the next speech that that next speaker gives. They were literally stand in line for it. And you know what Jody and I have found is it really only took about three dozen people to buy into what it is that we offer the planet that we've been able to sustain a company for 8 years.
You know, what I want to do, Jason, on this, and I don't know if I've told anyone really, but there's on the website, there's a mission. And my mission really is to see Join Up Dots as a metaphor for connections. And so, although on a daily basis, I'm connecting with people and I'm connecting with similar content, motivational speeches, inspirational content, whatever, the actual metaphor of it is that together, we can start touching across the world. And if somebody is in Bora Bora, we can get them connected to somebody in Israel who might have the answers to their problems. And to be honest, I haven't got a clue how I'm going to do this, but this is something in the back of my mind, that the podcasts are just a tiny little small part of bringing together an audience who can actually make a difference in the world.
I went to a conference. Actually, my wife Jody spoke at a conference in Paris a couple of years ago, and there was one foyer in the entryway. There was this one section, and on the back it said, on the one side up on top it said, "Have an hour?" question mark, and the other side it said, "Give an hour?" exclamation mark. And what you were able to do is to take a post-it, and you were able to look over and say, look, if I had an extra hour, here's what I could give. And then the other side, it was, if I could get an hour, here's what I would ask for. And David, what you were just saying, I just saw some version of that. What if someone in the Join Up Dots community, if they had an extra hour to give to the Join Up community, what would that look, sound, and feel like? And if that person could ask for an hour of someone else's gifts, talents, education, experience, or intuition, what would they ask for? And what if there was this kind of global exchange of bartered value, not by how much money someone makes per hour, but literally, I'll give you 60 minutes of this if you'd like it, and I'll ask you for 60 minutes because you have it to offer.
Powerful stuff, isn't it? If we can do that. And that's a dream. That's a dream that I'm aiming for.
Sign me up. I'll be the first on the wall.
Thank you so much. Just before we go, Jason, because we are having audio problems here, and so you are dipping out a lot. This is the part of the show when I want to send you back in time so that you're like a young Marty McFly and you have a one-on-one with your younger self. So with all the experiences that you've gained, all the countries that you've traveled through, all the cultures that you've viewed, what would you say to that young Jason who's probably sitting there thinking, why the hell haven't we got telly on at the moment? So I'm going to play the tune, and when it dies out, you're on the mic. This is the Sermon on the Mic.
With the best bit of the show, the Sermon on the Mic, the Sermon on the Mic.
You know, looking around, it's fascinating. The more we get to get our passport stamped and the more we get to jump out in the world, what I would say to the younger me from the older me for the older me is everybody wakes up in the morning, they put some kind of food or fuel into their system, they hang around people through the day, they do something that contributes to the world they live in. At the end of the day, they gather around flickering, flashing lights and tell stories, and at some point they fall asleep. And just remember, Jason, that everybody might do that differently, but the core of who we are as a species is the same. And to show up and to listen more. If there's one thing that I'll encourage you to do, it's to listen more. We have two ears and one mouth, and you've heard that all your life, but remember that one.
Were you somebody that didn't listen as much as you could have done? I know you said you was a child that was why, but are you aware that you could have listened more then?
I put things together in my head really fast, and I can solve most people's problems before they've completely figured out what the problem is. And yes, I have a tendency to want to get to the solution when someone may want to really understand by speaking what the problem is.
Well, I know our listeners today will have been all ears from the content that you've been providing, because it has been fascinating stuff. And I say this literally every show, really. Although it's an hour show, I wish it could go on to episodes 2, episodes 3, episodes 4, because there's so much that I would like to touch on your background, about the marathons, about how you actually sort of focus your energies in what direction, and whether you do actually like to eat a huge tub of Ben and Jerry's on the sofa and take it easy every now and again. So there's so much I want to talk to you about. So as I say to all the guests, the beauty about Join Up Dots is it is connecting our past and also our futures, and the dots continue to grow forward. So in the future, if there's anything that you'd like to come back on and share with us, please do that, because I really do believe that by joining up our dots and connecting our pasts, we have the best opportunities to build our futures. Jason Womack, thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolute honor. Thank you everyone for being here for us, and thank you for supporting Join Up Dots.
David doesn't want you to become a faded version of the...
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Join Up Dots, brought to you exclusively by PodcastersMastery.com, the only resource that shows you how to create a show, build an income, and still have time for the life that you love. Check out PodcastersMastery.com now.
David doesn't want you to become a faded version of the brilliant self you were once to become. So he's put together an amazing guide for you called the 8 Pieces of Advice That Every Successful Entrepreneur Practices, including the 2 that changed his life. Head over to joinupdots.com to download this amazing guide for free, and we'll see you tomorrow on Join Up Dots.